From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, strong words from the White House. How will Congress respond to Ukraine's call for help? And why is the Capitol still closed down to the general public? Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Wednesday of this past week, Ukrainian President Zelensky, via video conference call to a joint session of Congress, begged for American intervention as his country continues to be attacked by Russia. With plenty of raw video footage coming out of Ukraine showing the intentional targeting of residential areas and hospitals, the administration is ratcheting up their rhetoric, with some, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken and President Joe Biden, calling Vladimir Putin a war criminal. And here to introduce our first guest is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch Live and the president of Family Research Council.
Well, even as Ukrainian President Zelensky delivered a powerful address to Congress yesterday, Russian air campaigns continue to batter cities throughout the war-torn country, including an airstrike on a theater where hundreds had gathered for shelter. We're seeing in real time the brutality of war given technology. We're joined now for an update on the latest news by freelance war correspondent Chuck Holton. Chuck reported on much of this from Ukraine and has since crossed the border into Romania. Chuck, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Now, you're in Romania, but what is the latest from Ukraine as you crossed over? What was the sense after President Zelensky addressed the U.S. Congress?
Well, it was an easy day crossing the border. It was only a three-hour wait out in the cold with no shelter, no bathroom. It's really torturous getting across. And they said, oh, if you had come yesterday or the day before, it was much, much longer. I don't know how they get away actually making people stand out in the cold that long with children and old people and that sort of thing. But
now, which side of the border is that on? Is that on the Romanian side of the border?
No, that's actually on the Ukrainian side. That was actually to get out of Ukraine, to cross through what, you know, the border checkpoint on the Ukraine side took very, very long. They only had two people working and they had hundreds of people in line. And then actually getting across the Romanian part was very simple. It just waved you on through. And there were a lot, once you got through, there was a lot of help to be had from NGOs and Christian organizations that are there passing out food and warm hats and things like that.
So what's the delay coming out of Ukraine? Why the long lines getting out? I mean, I would think they would be wanting people to get to safety quickly.
They're not allowing any men from age 18 to 60 to leave the country without a very good reason. So any men that were in line, had to go through a lot of checks and things like that. But also, they are letting women and children go first. And so if you're a man like me, you're sitting there letting the women go first, and then more people show up, and they let the women go first, and then more people show up, and so on and so forth. So you just keep getting pushed further and further back in the line, and that's why it took me so long to get across.
So, Chuck, are you hearing anything positive on the negotiations for peace there between Russia and Ukraine?
Well, what we're seeing is this horrific amount of civilian deaths, basically terrorism that's being engaged in by Russia. And that actually is sort of good news in a way. I hate to say it that way, but what that means is that Russia feels like that's its only option at this point, because they are losing so badly on the battlefield. Whenever they engage Ukrainian forces, they are losing. And they've lost so many tanks and so many armored personnel carriers and so many helicopters that they really don't want to engage the Ukrainians, and they are out of a lot of things, fuel, ammunition, food. And so as they're running out of everything, the only thing they have left is these Smerch rockets that they just kind of launch at will. Then they have, rockets they launch from aircraft, and they're launching them on civilian targets because it's easier. But that shows that they are getting desperate and they're losing militarily. And so I think you're starting to see in the negotiations some wiggle room where they're starting to say, okay, well, maybe we're not going to give you ultimatums anymore, but maybe we'll actually talk about something to get this war stopped. And I think you will see that continue in the weeks to come.
as the Ukrainians continue to hold the line, which they seem to be doing quite well.
Right.
Yes. Chuck, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to talk with you, and appreciate the reports you've provided to us over the last few weeks.
All right.
Well, as the as Chuck described, the Ukrainians holding is forcing the Republicans, forcing the Russians rather, to come to the table of negotiations. Maybe peace is in the offering. We'll see. Joining us now, Congressman Greg Stube. He is a member of the House Armed Services Committee. Greg, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You heard Chuck's description of what's taking place on the ground there in Ukraine as he's crossed over into Romania. Ukrainians holding, the Russians becoming desperate. Do you think that we might be at a place, if the U.S. will step up its support for Ukraine, that we could see a negotiated peace?
Well, with the aid that was just approved last week by Congress, it was $14 billion, $3.5 billion of that was specifically for military aid, equipment, weapons. And then President Biden yesterday announcing anti-aircraft, anti-tank weapons and ammunition that's going to be sent. Hopefully that's going to allow the Ukrainians to further defend themselves. The president didn't take the step to go to transferring MiGs or aircraft to be able to defend themselves. But with the stalling of the reports that we're getting from all the different assets on the ground, it sounds like the Russians, if the Ukrainians get more of this weaponry and defensive weaponry, like the drones that are going to be sent, that'll help them tremendously defending against the attacks. And maybe at some point Putin will pull back, but I just can't see that. I think he's determined to try to overtake the country. So what I'm afraid is he's going to get desperate and then do something that no one in the world wants him to do.
That is the concern that many have, that he's not one who will back down and in desperation could escalate. That, I would think, would draw others into this battle beyond just the Ukrainian forces.
It would. And with the talk, you know, there's been a lot of bluffing and talk around the edges about tactical nukes and that type of weaponry. And if that is launched, I don't think that the Western world can sit back and watch a country get attacked by nuclear warfare. I think that would allow the NATO allies to come in and defend Ukraine. I think America would be put in a very tough position in order to defend the Ukrainian people and not allow one of our enemies to be able to use nuclear warfare in Europe.
Is that a message that needs to be delivered now to Putin from this administration and from NATO?
Well, it needs to be delivered now, and all of this should have been delivered, you know, weeks, months ago. I mean, this administration is so far behind the eight ball on what we should be doing. The moment the Russians were building up on the Ukrainian border, that's when the sanctions should have started. That's when they should have sanctioned the Russian government. That's when they should have sanctioned Russian oil and gas. They should have never repealed the sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which opened up billions of dollars of revenue to the Russian government. Zelensky himself has told other members of Congress that that revenue has helped fund the war against them. So there's so many things that could have been done to prevent where we're at now. And unfortunately, we are now in a circumstance where Russians engaging militarily in Ukraine, and now you don't have a lot of options. The sanctions came too late. The Russians are obviously going to be able to work through the Chinese to get some economic buffering, but those sanctions should have been put in place months ago to prevent this from happening to begin with.
Congressman Stube, I want to shift gears for just a moment. He's got a couple minutes left. But while all the focus is on Ukraine and Russia, you have the issue of the Iranian nuclear deal, which is, as reports are saying, very close to reaching an agreement. Of course, Russia playing a role in that as well. What is the latest on the negotiations that you're hearing about?
Well, the latest is you have an administration who is negotiating with a country that chants death to America and death to Israel. And they're so desperate to get oil from another country because now they've decided because of pressure to not take Russian oil, where they're now they want to get it from Iran. They want to get it from Venezuela, our enemies, and going into a failed deal with the Iranians. That is the absolute worst case scenario for our country. There is no way that we should agree to any path to nuclear capabilities for the Iranian regime. Absolutely not. The Trump administration was smart and cared about the security and safety of Americans to get out of the JCPOA that was negotiated by the Obama administration, and to even think that we're going to negotiate with the Iranians, and that deal's brokered by the Russians. And then if that deal goes through, the Russians would be able to use that deal with the Iranians to subvert the Western sanctions that are currently in place. So the Russians know that if that deal goes through, they'll just use that deal in the, with the Iranians to subvert all the Western sanctions that have been placed on them.
It's, we seem to be negotiating from a position of weakness rather than strength. When I say we, the United States, this is a pathway for Iran to have a nuclear weapon through this deal.
Yeah, it's a path to a nuclear weapon. It's a path to open up financial resources to them. There's also talk today about them removing the terrorist sanctions for one of their terrorist regimes. What that does is opens up billions of dollars of revenue to that terrorist regime so that they can commit terror all across the world. I mean, haven't we learned our lesson?
Greg, we got to leave it there. Thanks so much. We're out of time. Thanks for joining us. Stick with us, folks. We're back after this.
Do you find it challenging to stick to reading God's Word daily? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. The Stand on the Word 2-year Bible reading plan takes you through the Bible so that you can stay grounded in God's truth. Start this adventure today with FRC. When you sign up, we text you every Sunday with daily passages and questions that help you prepare for conversations with your friends and your family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. Correction, earlier in our last segment, I said Greg Stube was a member of the House Armed Services Committee. He's actually on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. President Biden took a what I would call a major rhetorical step yesterday when he confirmed that he considers Russian President Vladimir Putin a war criminal. This signifies the harshest criticism from any administration official to date. But more than a week ago, Congress held its first hearing to hold Putin accountable, pressing for the prosecution of Putin for war crimes. Here to discuss this is Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. He is the ranking member of the Congressional Executive Commission on China, co-chair of the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission, senior member on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, and also the ranking member on the Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, and Global Human Rights in International Organizations. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Tony, thank you so very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
I want to play this clip very quickly of the president yesterday being asked this question about whether or not Vladimir Putin was or is a war criminal. Play clip number one, please.
Mr. President, after everything we've seen, are you ready to call Putin a war criminal?
No.
Are you going to meet with him?
Did you ask me whether I would call
Putin a war criminal, sir?
I think he is a war criminal.
Will you be meeting with
All right. A lot of noise back there. This was at a White House event. He was asked by a Fox reporter, Mr. President, after everything you've seen, are you ready to call Putin a war criminal? Biden said no, but then 30 seconds later, did you ask me whether I would call, and the reporter said, a war criminal. He said, oh, I do think he is a war criminal. Now, let me ask you, Congressman Smith, that declaration by the president, that's words, but words require actions. What would be the next step?
Well, the next step would be for the State Department, which is already suggesting it needs to further investigate. I mean, who launched this blitzkrieg into Ukraine that is analogous to the Nazis going into Poland in 1939? It was Putin. And we have seen every day that civilians are being targeted, schools, hospitals, and that is absolutely a violation of Geneva Conventions. It's also, it is de jure a war crime. And the person doing it is Vladimir Putin. I believe, and this is what our hearing was focused on, that he needs to be designated as a war crime. A tribunal, international tribunal, needs to be set up immediately, no delay, like we've done in the past, and so designate him. It can be done almost overnight. And then to the record, his other atrocities could be added going forward. But the evidence is overwhelming. And Tony, you know this because you were very much involved in this. When ISIS was slaughtering Christians, and many of them made their way into Erbil, and I went there and visited with those individuals, the State Department couldn't call that a genocide. It took a resolution by Jeff Fortenberry to put the Congress on record calling it a genocide. And it was a genocide. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And now, you know, delay is denial when you're talking about these designations, because I do believe if he's so designated a war criminal and the tribunal is set up immediately, it will have some chilling effect on other people's complicity in these horrific crimes.
The one thing that's unique about this, Congressman Smith, is that technology. You know, we saw what happened in Erbil or in the Middle East in that region. But technology is such that we're very connected with what's happening with Ukraine, where we're seeing in real time not just news footage, but very graphic clips being sent from individuals and being posted on social media accounts. And so the evidence, as you said, is right there. Times past, we had to wait to collect the evidence after the conflict was over and we had to sort through the rubble. We have it right now. So the next step would be for the State Department to go to the United Nations and call for action, would it not?
Absolutely. And I have a resolution that calls for that. We do want the president to take the lead. If not, some other foreign head of state should take the lead, but it ought to be the United States of America. We ought to be out front. You know, it's important that we give Zelensky the kind of defensive aid capability that he desires. Why wasn't it given a year ago? Now, as those troops are being to amass and get deployed on the border under the pretext of war games with Lukashenko in Belarus. But that said, this could be part of a holding to account. And hopefully, you know, the people around Putin, including the Russian people, if the world coalesces around your president is a war criminal, they might be less inclined to follow. And that goes for the soldiers as well. And, you know, Tony, we've seen those clips of those young conscripts, those young Russian soldiers who didn't have a clue that this is what they're going to be called upon to do. So I think we need to spread that kind of accountability throughout the entire ranks. And look at all the people protesting in Moscow and elsewhere. And of course, they're being batted down and hit and hurt by the Russian secret police. But that said, those numbers will grow if an indictment is handed down immediately. And let me also say, it ought to be done, if we can't do it in the Security Council, which is unlikely because of the veto power that both China and Russia has, well, then let's do it in the General Assembly. And that's where a resolution could be offered and a tribunal established.
Very quickly, Congressman Smith, before we're out of time, what can our listeners and viewers do?
Well, I think call your congressman, pray. And I think prayer more than anything else is needed during these atrocities, which absolutely breaks your heart. When President Zelensky gave his address virtually to a joint session of Congress, and I was there like I think every other member, he showed a video clip that was just, you know, not unlike what we see every night. But right. When you see all of those people, call your congressman, call the White House. I think the number, if I'm not mistaken, is 456-1414. Call them and say, tribunal, indict them. Why wait? We waited with Milosevic. We waited with Charles Taylor in Rwanda, and he was president of Liberia. I was pushing for the one for Yugoslavia for months and then years. It was very slow, but now, as you pointed out so well, this is in real time. We see it all.
Right.
You can always add to the indictment.
Congressman Chris Smith, we're out of time, but always great to talk with you. Thanks for your leadership on Capitol Hill.
Tony, thank you so very much. And thank you for your leadership, both on Capitol Hill and throughout this country. It's incredible. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Stick with us, folks. We're coming back with more after this.
There is only one truth, God's truth. As Christians, we are called to align our beliefs and actions to what the Bible says is true. at Family Research Council's Center for Biblical Worldview, our team of experts have created tools and resources to help aid in the fight for truth. These resources dive into issues including voting, religious liberty, abortion, marriage, and sexuality. The center serves to help Christians understand why Scripture must be authoritative and to equip believers to advance and defend their faith in the workplace, in their schools, and in the public square. The Center for Biblical Worldview experts provide research and resources to help prepare believers to give a biblical answer to our culture's most pressing questions. Access these free resources at frc.org/worldview. See the Worldview Fellows' latest blogs, op-eds, interviews, and publications by signing up for the newsletter at frc.org/subscriptions.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, the website tonyperkins.com. Well, 2 years after the Capitol building was closed to the public in response to COVID, plans are finally underway for a reopening. But it is a three-phased opening, with business as usual not returning until after Labor Day. Now, museums, stadiums, theaters, businesses, and workplaces are open across the country. But the U.S. Capitol can't fully reopen until September. Citizens' right to petition Congress is directly enshrined in the Constitution, making it long past time for the People's House to fully open, allowing the American people access to their government. Joining me now is a leader in this effort to reopen the Capitol, Congressman Brian Stile. He is a member of the Committee on House Administration and House Financial Services Committee and represents Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, you have been very clear that this proposed three-phase opening is not good enough. Tell us why.
It's woefully inadequate for a couple reasons. One, it doesn't fully reopen the United States Capitol in the House of Representatives until Labor Day. We need to rip the Band-Aid off these COVID-era policies immediately and get our way of life back. Two, we still have a process here in the House of Representatives where individuals have to be invited to come and speak to their member of Congress. You'd almost think the Democrats were nervous about having constituents come here to the Hill to talk about higher costs, to talk about failed energy policies, to talk about the fact that the Democrats won't secure the border, and the list goes on. And third, we have individuals coming to the United States Capitol from school groups all across the country this spring. And instead of allowing tours of the United States Capitol, the bastion of democracy, what we're seeing is Nancy Pelosi dramatically limiting tours to all these school groups coming in. It just makes your heart sink for these students.
Yeah, this is something that is a once in a lifetime for many of these kids to be able to come to Congress, see how our government is supposed to work. Now, Congressman, some of your colleagues have used the excuse that, well, security is an issue. We still have January 6th to deal with. In fact, Congressman Gerald Conley of Virginia said this. This was last year. When discussing the opening of the Capitol, he said, for some lawmakers, just seeing members of the public back in the Capitol building could bring back memories of that violent day. You know, I don't mean to be offensive, but you know what? I think it's time for them to put on their big boy pants and either go to work and allow the American people to have access to their government or get another job, quite frankly.
Yeah, we just have to rip the Band-Aid off of all of these COVID-era policies, off of all the January 6th excuses as it relates to allowing members of the public access to the United States Capitol and access to come and share their grievances with their members of Congress. It's no doubt that we're seeing a lot of excuses from the left. Originally, it was COVID. That was the original reason the United States Capitol and the House office building closed over 2 years ago. The tune has shifted, and now it's a little more January 6th than it is COVID. But again, it's excuse after excuse rather than reopening the Capitol. We have the tools in the toolkit to make sure that members of the public and members of Congress are safe and secure. And we can do that by reopening the House office buildings and allowing individuals to come in, share their grievances with their members of Congress, and obtain a tour of the Capitol. It's beyond frustrating that Nancy Pelosi continues to keep the United States Capitol and the House closed.
Are you seeing any movement from the other side of the aisle among Democrats to say, yeah, it is time to reopen?
Maybe a little tiny bit, but they don't want it to reopen. They don't want to allow us to get our way of life back. They don't want to return to normal. They want to create a new normal going forward. That's what's so darn frustrating. House office buildings used to be fully open to the public. You'd be able to come in, walk through basic airport-style security, come in and meet with your member of Congress. Now, you're not allowed in the building without an invitation. So any member that doesn't want to meet with a constituent that's upset has the ability to keep them outside the building. That's absurd. We need to be working in the opposite direction to allow members of the public to come in and share their frustrations with all the crazy policies that are going on in Washington, D.C. right now.
Right. And even for those of us who are in D.C. working, even to get to the Capitol is such a hassle. And so most of the time it's not worth the hassle because it takes so much time to clear all the hurdles to get in for meetings on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, absolutely. And what Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats are doing is making it more difficult for people to come in. It's always been a challenge. I understand that, but they're adding to the burden. They're adding in requirements. They're tracking who comes into the United States, House Representatives' office buildings. It is just kind of disgraceful what they've done and their work to continue to prevent us from just getting our way of life back up here on Capitol Hill and across the country.
Well, Congressman Stahl, I appreciate you joining us today, and I appreciate you pushing for the Capitol to be reopened to the American people.
Thank you very much.
All right. And, you know, I'm quite frankly, I'm tired of hearing this January 6th thing. Again, and I'll just restate it. If they can't if they can't deal with reality and go to work, then they need to find another job. And look, we had a shooting at FRC 10 years ago by a Southern Poverty Law Center incited LGBTQ activist. And guess what? We were back at work the next day. I have no sympathy for those who want to be shielded from the American public. That's what it's all about. Because they cannot tolerate being challenged for their destructive policies that they're pushing on America.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.